Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this March 3rd, 2023, 10:05 on the clock. And you have your host, James J. Maloff, here. In part two today, we are going to speak with our friends at Grace Lutheran Church. We have the Grace Players coming in, their theater community benefit event coming up. Sandy, Jim, Randy, we'll be talking with them. Right now on the phone, we have Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, James. How are you today?
Doing good. How are you doing over there?
Oh, it's been a week, man, I tell you. It is just everything's hopping all at the same time right now. So between the Elks and our fish fries going on and Madison and the budget going on and, you know, county board stuff going on and selling houses going on. So it's been hopping this week, man, I tell you.
I want to touch on a number of those things, Scott. But first, where are you calling us from today?
So I'm literally sitting in the Elks parking lot. We're going to do our prep for our Lenten fish fry tonight. So I come down here on the Friday mornings and I help, you know, tinfoil wrap potatoes and fill tartar sauce cups and make some coleslaw and all those types of things, get ready for that, while watching Jack, who's in the back seat today, because, of course, school's off today.
Right, of course.
Right? So it's we're just hanging out in the parking lot at the Elks for a little while with you today.
I appreciate both of you, and thank Jack for me, too. I appreciate you, Jack. Thanks so much, and thanks for joining us. And I ask in part because I always like to, when we have these opportunities, Scott, to show how much this means to you, not only the job, but joining us on the air and being able to talk to, you know, to your constituents and everything, how important you think this stuff is, and appreciate that. We have plenty of people that have to cancel for various reasons, and it's understandable, and the day job always comes first, and by that I mean being a dad and a husband and all that, but when you're able to appreciate it, and Scott goes out of his way to do these things, and it's not always a fun time talking to me, so he really, I mean, that really means something that he's doing this. I appreciate you, Scott. Also,
it's all good.
I also appreciate also the opportunity to kind of show the different levels of politics. I think as a country, we approach politics and look at politicians and talk about politicians in a certain light, but we tend to use that blanket for all politicians. And there is a gigantic difference of somebody who is, you know, sitting on the Senate floor or something in Washington, D.C., and somebody that is like yourself, that is representing constituents and everything, but doing more of your work from the state, on the state level. And do you think, Scott, just going here to start off our conversation, do you think that that is part of the reason why we have gotten a lot of people turning away from politics? Because they're not... we've got this umbrella approach we're treating it now, where everything is lumped together.
Right. Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the reason that most of us at the state level do as much as we do to try to be as available as we can to be in our communities, to, you know, like I said, to be on the Elks and to, you know, to be at the Y every day and just being around everybody, because it's a whole different show, right? I mean, when I represent my 57,000 people between the four counties I have, that's a lot different than what Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson do when they represent the entire state, when they have to basically... live in D.C., they don't have that expectation to be as available as somebody who's more local. So, I mean, that's why we try to be as local as we can. And, you know, and I tell the story all the time, like, when I first got elected, my wife was a little intimidated about some of the events we would have to go to, because she kind of had that thought, too, like, oh, they're above us, they're not one of us. And, you know, after you start hanging out with a group of us, you realize we're actually just real people, you know, so it is a whole different animal from what people see on TV from the higher levels down towards, you know, the state level and even the county and the local levels. So, I mean, that's why, you know, you always keep good relationships with your mayors and your county board chairs and, you know, your guys like Lance, who's on the Elks with me here, and, you know, guys like Shane, who I'm always at the Y with. And, you know, so we're all just doing our thing on a daily basis and trying to do the best thing we can for the people we represent.
It's important, too, I think, to have these distinctions, to have these definitions, to understand the differences of the different levels of politics and everything, especially if we want to make future politicians. It's one of those things. We did a story on the morning show earlier about jobs that, you know, are seeing a lot of people not really joining. They're seeing their numbers go down. Politics is one of them. People are not wanting to get into this game as much anymore, or do this for a career. And I don't think that's a coincidence. coincidence when you see that the way that we treat politicians. Everybody should be held accountable. I don't think anybody's going to fight me on that one. But as far as like the way that it seems like you can't win for losing. You know, no matter what, even when you do good, it seems that all the media wants to focus on is negatives. And again, there needs to be accountability. But I also feel like we need to do a better job of showing a balance of this. Like politicians like yourself that are on the ground floor that are working diligently. And just heard Scott what he's doing for the Elks right now and those kind of things. Many years you've joined us, and not just you, but other representatives that also have a D or an R, all those things. That's side by side.
Yeah.
It's showing more of that light to that, I think, hopefully creates, and we will have future politicians, because you don't want what could happen. And that's, to me, people who are only doing politics because they want to get, they're, if I'm being blunt, they're not talented at anything else. So this is what they can make their 15 seconds of fame on. They're not a good enough singer or actor or musician. So, well, wait a minute. What can I do to get 15 seconds of fame? I'll be a politician. Like, that is not what we need. That's going to take us steps back.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the, you know, when you talk to somebody who's running for an election, I mean, that's, you know, you always want to hear their backstory. You want to hear what their expertise is. You want to know what their private sector experience is. You want to know what their family experiences are. I mean, there are, And I don't say it to knock the guys and gals that do it, but there are 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are doing some of the things I'm doing at the Capitol, and a lot of people wonder, okay, well, what kind of life experience are you bringing to this job? So there is that aspect to it, you know, that it's been in the family forever, so I'm just going to do what my dad did or what my grandpa did or things like that. And then there's other people who have real-world policy experience or things that happened in their life or somebody else's life that drove them to an issue that made them want to do these things. And I think once everybody gets down there, and even the ones who are less experienced in other life things, they tend to learn a lot from people who have more experience. So I think as a collective group, we're able to temper some of those issues that arise in that aspect. There's always going to be 5 to 10, I think, out of the 99 of us in the assembly who are just not there for the right reasons, but for the most part, everybody's even-keeled, and they know what the right things to do are. I think the only challenge is sometimes we just disagree on how to get to the same answer that we agree on, because I can almost say 100% of the time, we all know what the problems are, we all know what the solutions are. I just think sometimes we just differ on how to get to it, and I think that gets overblown sometimes, too.
Speaking with 72nd Wisconsin Assembly District Representative Scott Krug right now. And Scott, you mentioned that you've got some county board work that you've been doing this week and that such. What's been going on there?
Yeah, so Adams County Board has been an interesting endeavor here this last year, just trying to get my feet wet for the first time on that board and understand everything that happens at a 6,000-foot view, where I'm at a 30,000-foot view at the state level. So we've been dealing with some interesting things down there, trying to figure out some personnel issues and some funding issues, and trying to advocate back to the state on obviously things that need to be done for local budgets versus what my usual perspective on the state budget is, trying to figure out how to put the thing together. And now I get to advocate to other state reps in the area and try to help them understand what's needed on the local level. So it's been interesting to take the other perspective and see what kind of impact the state actually sends back down to the county to figure out how to get done. So it's drinking from the fire hose a little bit. It's always nice to be learning something new, but it's definitely a challenge.
Has there been some things, I know you haven't been doing it too long, but have you already noticed some things that you might not have noticed otherwise?
Yeah, and hearing a lot and having these relationships with everybody who's down at the county level here in Adams, just knowing some of the struggles they historically face. You know, Adams County is the third poorest county in the state, so we're looking to find opportunities to have economic development come to the county. We're always looking at the backside of that problem with the poverty in Adams County. How do we take care of people's health issues in the county? How do we have providers come give access to people who are in need of services? You know, all of these transportation-related problems that people have, even if we had economic development opportunities, how do we get people in impoverished areas to be able to get to their employers? How do we deal with child care in the county? How do we, so all of these big topics that we work on at the top levels of the state budget. You get to see them actually being applied to everybody's real life when you're on a county government. And those struggles are real for people, and it helps. Honestly, for me, it gives me even a better perspective at the state level when I'm crafting, you know, ideas for state budget, proposals, and when it comes to water quality and all of those things too. Having a chance to be on my Tri-Lakes board while I'm on the county board, while I'm doing my state government stuff, all three of those wrap in together to say, okay, this is what we actually really need right here, right now. And I think the biggest thing it does is it helps me get over this idea that one size fits all for anything, because it just doesn't. You know, what works in Adams County just absolutely does not work for Brown County. So we have to figure out ways to separate those types of things when we're crafting statewide proposals.
You mentioned the issue of transportation. I had this discussion on the air a couple of times as far as Amtrak's plans, their passenger rail service, they're proposed to open stations in cities across Wisconsin. Do you think that's one of those things? I don't know if that's going to happen maybe in the next couple of years, but do you think that that's something the next 5-10 years that you could see happening?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you start seeing a lot of the shifting dynamics of the workforce and the mobility of our workforce, and how somebody who lives in Wisconsin Rapids isn't necessarily always working here. We're always, heading to either Wausau or something, to Appleton and Green Bay into Madison, for example, who could take advantage of some of those opportunities. And I don't think it's going to be a massively expanded process or system, but I think you'll start seeing some more stops along the way, maybe between that Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis corridor, especially to try to get some activity in those in-between areas.
I know that we're always looking, even well before the pandemic, let alone now, we're looking to not only keep Wisconsinites in Wisconsin, but to bring more people into the state. Do you think that that transportation issue that could solve some of that?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you see the highest areas of growth outside of the state of Wisconsin, especially, are the Twin Cities, and then you start looking in-state and you see the biggest area of growth are the Fox Cities, and you see all that area in between, and those are all where our prime candidates for commuters are coming from, is right between the Twin Cities and the Fox Cities. We've got to figure out a way to connect those people's opportunities with their abilities to get those opportunities, and thankfully, I still think, in the end, I think this new rage of telework and online opportunities is going to overtake the need for actual physical transportation into the near future here, but there's still a role to play for actually being able to get people to some of these places too. So, and those are conversations we're having as part of the state budget already now too, now that the governor's introduced his budget, now the legislature is, starting to tear those things apart and figure out what works and what doesn't. And that's obviously part of the puzzle right now. Even as we speak, is how do we work some of those things back into the budget process that we're already underway with.
As long as we're talking about it, let's get into the budget. As you mentioned, Governor Evers proposed a historic $7 billion budget surplus. Now, certainly, this is bartering. This is a lot of what politics has always been, and what we're just have a little bit more insight of nowadays, I think. He has his proposal. You guys give yours. You go back and forth. And if it works out, neither side is really that happy and that sad. I mean, this is what bartering is all about. Is that a little bit of what's going to be happening here?
Yeah, I mean, this is the Super Bowl of Wisconsin politics. The only difference is the Super Bowl of us doing our job is going to take 4 months to come together to somebody raising a trophy, and that trophy is the governor signing the budget. And that's honestly, it's happened the last two sessions with a split government, with Evers in the East Wing and the legislature under a different party. It's worked really well, actually. So I'm not overly concerned that we're not going to get to the right answer. This same process has happened now the third time over, where the governor introduces the budget. The Joint Finance Committee says, thanks for the proposal, but let's all sit down and start figuring out what works and what doesn't. And like any other bill, the budget bill does not ever, 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 or any other bill ever, 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 go from its inception mode to finished product without being changed 100 times in between. This one just takes a lot more input. So we started going around to all of our districts. All 99 of us will have listening sessions across our districts. The Joint Finance Committee will have the entire Joint Finance Committee go across the state of Wisconsin and stop in 5 or 6 different cities and get input regionally. We all take that back to our budget teams and have discussions and talk about priorities and figure out where money actually is, which is a big part of this proposal right now, is when we talk about a projected $7 billion surplus, the fact that, you know, $3 billion of that is probably usable for long-term funding because inflationary pressures are just making us use that much extra money for things we already do. So that eats a lot of that $7 billion already. So when people hear those numbers up front, it sounds great, but it's not as big as it is because the things we're already doing are costing a lot more than they did last year. So that's going to eat a chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us, you know, $3 billion of new money to work with towards figuring out tax cuts or education spending or correction spending or UW and K-12 spending together. And, you know, we've got these top 10 things we want to try to accomplish and figure out how to get together and kumbaya on.
Mm.
I think the biggest two right now are probably transportation funding, like we talked about a little bit earlier, trying to do a lot more maintenance than, you know, building out of road projects. And second is our shared revenue program is so outdated right now that our municipalities and our counties and our villages, like I talked about the county board work, is that the biggest thing we're advocating for is a bigger share of the pie for our local governments to be able to accomplish the things that the state and the federal government require them to do. So I think those two things are probably the biggest, and I think honestly those two things probably have the most agreement going into the process. So I don't see too much headache or heartburn trying to get this budget done. The only thing you try to avoid, and I would encourage people to avoid it too, is just to stay away from the media accounts of he said, she said, and this one said it's a great thing, and they said it's a horrible thing. It's, you know, the guys at the top level, whether they're in legislative leadership or the governor's office, they have a job to do, which is to pitch their proposals publicly, and our job in the rank and file is to get your input and to make sure the things that you want actually get into the budget. So there's some difference even within our legislature and our government system on how you should, you know, digest the budget. I would say stick with your local representatives' perspectives versus what you see in the headline news.
Hmm.
And if you don't trust your local Republican or your local Democrat, call the next local one over and ask the next Democrat or Republican next to them, because those are things that, you know, like Katrina and I will work on a lot of things together, and Pat and I will work on things together, and Pat and Katrina will work on some things together. So it's not all as contentious as you would be told in the news sometimes when it comes mm-hmm. to putting together a state budget. So.
I appreciate that, and I completely agree with what you're saying there. I think you keep if you don't find those things, keep digging, you will find them. You know, it's not that hard. And
right, I mean, between Facebook and our e-updates and our listening session and our media stuff, I mean, there's no shortage of being able to get your local perspective on how the budget's going. And I encourage people all the time, is just either call my office or shoot us an email and just get onto the e-update list, and we'll go through every week for the next 4 or 5 months, you know, high important areas that we're going to talk about in the budget and ask for your input. And every week people will get a chance to weigh in on a different issue, and you can always call every day and ask, you know, a question or weigh in on an issue. We've got John in my office has been there 5 years now, so John's an old Department of Revenue guy who knows numbers like you believe, so he can get you the real skinny details. And we just got a brand new hire in my office, Marina. She's a pretty amazing new whippersnapper, just graduated from UW Whitewater and getting her feet wet and all these things now. So
very cool.
Pretty excited to have a pretty good staff on board now. So
recently, late last month, you, Representative Vandermeer and Representative Tony Kurtz, had a good chat with the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association, their leadership development program. How did that go? What were some of the things that were discussed?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, just having local growers come to the Capitol is a really cool thing. And it's nice that the Cranberry Growers Association does this every year. And the potato guys do it, too, and the vegetable growers, they all take some time to come down for a day, and it's nice to sit down and talk to them about local issues. And again, the biggest thing that came up is transportation, because it's important for agriculture too to be able to count on local roads to be able to get to the state highways. We also talked a lot about research and getting money to the university system so the research can be conducted, and that the labs at the UW are actually in good shape, that, you know, we can count on drawing people's interest to our university system to develop research. And get grants and all those things. So those are the two biggest things I think the cranberry growers were interested in, is just making sure we're making investments in things that are going to benefit their industry, which is great. I mean, you know, everybody hears, you know, bad thing when they hear the word lobbyists, but that's exactly what these folks are too, is lobbying for things that they want. And there is no shortage of that type of input coming into the Capitol this time of year. So,
from the numbers that we're seeing, it looks like our cranberry industry is healthy. Are you hearing that from them?
Yeah, I think, you know, most of our growers are reasonably happy. They just like to have some of these flexibilities and options to expand their operations as they need to, and to diversify from time to time when things are not going good. So it's always a good partnership with our local growers if we can help them find different ways to find different cash crops, like we did with the hemp bill. It's nice to have an option for them to be able to rent land to somebody else. Like, we're going to give them an option to my community solar bill that we're going to do this session, to maybe rent out some of their, you know, land that isn't high productive value, and to helping create clean energy. So, I mean, there's all kinds of smaller things that we work around the edges to keep all of their operations sustainable and able to grow into the future to hand to the next generation, like they've been handed generation and generation already. So it's just always keeping our eye on the future is how we help the cranberry industry the most, is saying, I know we've always done this, but we've got to think about what we're going to do next.
Similar to something I was going to ask as far as the budget, of how much time you have to spend when it comes to the budget, not only focusing on this year, but the next budget and that kind of thing. It sounds very similar to that, where it's one of those things where right now we're trying to take care of, but also looking ahead.
Yeah, it is, because every budget is on, I mean, it's in its own silo for sure, because it's its own bill and it's its own two-year cycle, but every budget builds into the next budget, because this budget, we're starting on what's called base, and that's what the last budget ended up as. So if we increased education funding last budget, which we did $200 per year per pupil, that is our new base number that we start from. So if we add more money into that, that's great. If we don't add more money into that, that's the way it shakes out. But every base budget ends up being bigger than the last base budget. And we've got to make sure we continue to grow revenues to a point where we can sustain those things. Otherwise, we got to start making cuts in the next base budget, which are still increases over the budget before. But it's hard to get those people's perspectives on those things to understand that, yes, we're still spending more than we ever did before, but it probably might be less on this thing than it was last budget. So that's the technicalities of the budget that drive me nuts trying to describe to people, is what base budget means versus what the actual budget says, you know, what a surplus means, what all of these numbers all play into each other. So that's why we do so many listening sessions, to try to describe exactly what people might be hearing and what it actually really means.
Scott, we'll get you out of here on maybe one of the more important questions I ask you today. Who is going to be the setup man for Devin Williams for the Brewers this year? I'm not sure who's going to be that middle reliever, that guy in those in-between innings and everything to get you from your starter to Devin. I'm not sure who they're going to go with. They got a couple of guys they brought in that look good, but I'm not sure. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, when you got eight guys that could potentially be starters, a lot of those guys are just going to have to start transitioning into the bullpen. So you got guys like Aaron Ashby that might end up being a good setup guy, maybe like Smoltz and Glavin were at the end of their careers with the Braves, mm-hmm. or something like that. You have to get creative with a starter that's going to have to fill that role. And, you know, you touch on the Brewers a little bit. It's been really interesting these last couple of weeks that the tie-in between the Brewers and the state budget has happened too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the governor starts talking about trying to do funding for the Brewers stadium, and you're a huge Brewers fan, but you're also a really big fiscal conservative, you get really torn on what the answer is going to be on that one. So,
yeah, I imagine.
You know, it's crazy, because you don't want them to leave, but knowing enough about baseball, I know that when the Brewers come to threaten us, saying, if you don't give us a new stadium, we're leaving, I know that they can't just leave if they want to. Mm-hmm. You know, so I take some of that baseball knowledge that we developed over the years on our show here,
mm-hmm.
and take it back to the Capitol and tell leadership, hey, you know what, that the owners have to vote 75% of the ownership to let Milwaukee move to a different city. And I know that Tampa's been looking to do this forever, and Cleveland tried to do it. And so I kind of pitched this to Robin, and I said, you know, if you want to put together a committee on stadium funding, I know a great guy that could chair it. So I told him, I'd jump in. if we're ever going to do a committee on the Brewer Stadium funding here. So it's nice that these two things tied in a little bit this time.
It's actually how I wanted to wrap up the show, too, because, you know, for those that have listened, Scott and I, for years, we usually wrap up talking Brewers because we did our homework. Now we get to have some fun. But this time it actually did have a tie into something, a previous conversation with the budget. So that is going to be interesting to see how that develops. And I'm with you. I don't believe there's even a shadow of a chance of the Brewers leaving or anything. But it is going to be one of these interesting things we're going to have to face in the next couple of years of how that stadium, how they're going to pay that. I mean, they're redoing Camden Yards. I feel like that happened yesterday. It's over 20 years old now, and it's already an ancient stadium. That's so weird. So it is one of those things when you think of revenue. We've seen recent reports of Wisconsin has bounced back as far as tourism goes. You want to keep that going. You want to up those things. You can't lose an MLB team in the process. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be an interesting next conversation.
Yeah, the income tax developed by those players coming to Milwaukee pays for that stadium more over than it does. So losing them is a bigger problem than keeping them. It's just figuring out how to keep them is going to be the concern over the next year. It's not going to be in the budget. I'm just telling people now. But we'll figure it out during the session.
It'll be interesting to talk about. Maybe it'll show up next month when we get together again. Thanks for the time, Scott. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you guys both putting up with me here. Thank you for the time. You guys have a great weekend.
Yeah. Take care. Say bye, Jack.
Bye.
Talk soon, Scott. Take care. Always appreciate the time from State Representative Scott Krug. Always a good conversation with him. Coming up in part two, we're going to talk to our friends at Grace Lutheran Church. The Grace Players are coming to join us here on the air in a few, right at WFHR's Morning Magazine.